April the 15th, and we are in Sanhedrin, continuing with our shir on Perek Chelek. We are on Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph, and we are discussing Sanherib and his attempted invasion of Yerushalayim and how he was defeated by Chizkiyahu. So last time we talked about Chizkiyahu not saying Shira and what that was all about. And now, so the Gemara moves on Tzadi Dalet Amud Aleph. It digresses for a moment to Yisro, because it compares the fact that Klal Yisrael, that Chizkiyahu didn't say Shira, and that was an embarrassment that he didn't say Shira, and Klal Yisrael didn't say Baruch Hashem until Yisro came and said Baruch Hashem. So you have that. Then the Gemara gets back to Sancheriv, and now it talks specifically how Chizkiyahu defeated Sancheriv, and that's how it was that he didn't actually militarily defeat him, but how in his Zechus Sancheriv was destroyed. So it tells us how Chizkiyahu had eight names, and he defeated Sancheriv, who had eight names. And then the Gemara goes on to say that Sancheriv did have one positive thing, which is that he at least did not speak negatively about Eretz Yisrael, while Klal Yisrael did speak negatively about Eretz Yisrael. So this is an important thing to bear in mind for us, that we have to be careful when it comes to Eretz Yisrael not to speak negatively about Eretz Yisrael. And that's really every year Parsha Shlach, we should have that mussar to be careful not to speak negatively about Eretz Yisrael. Basically, the idea seems to be that the land itself, you don't speak negatively about the land. I don't think that precludes speaking negatively about the government, because that would be something which no one could sustain. But still, there should not be any discussion that would make people not be enamored with Eretz Yisrael. So we don't talk about things that are negative. It should only be a positive. Everything should be spun in a positive way when discussing Eretz Yisrael.
Does that mean we can't discourage people? We should not discourage people from moving to Eretz Yisrael?
That depends on the reason. We can discourage people from moving to Eretz Yisrael, just not speak badly about the land. The Gemara then says that it compares Sancheriv to Paro, that Paro, who he was Mecharef, he spoke disdainfully towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly. He didn't send a Shliach, so Hashem also paid him back or punished him directly, while Sancheriv was through an agent, so Hashem punished him through an agent. Rashi says that this is really speaking about a positive note about Paro, a negative about Sancheriv. That Paro didn't use an intermediary. He spoke directly about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Using an intermediary seems to be the Gemara seems to be saying, according to Rashi, that using an intermediary is somewhat it's degrading. Like, you know, you're not even good enough for me to talk about you. I've got to send my agent to do it. So Sancheriv, who sent an agent, a shliach, so he gets punished through a shliach, which is more degrading. While Paro, who at least did it directly, so he gets punished directly, which is not as degrading. The Marsha brings another pshat that it's the reverse, that Sancheriv is that Paro is worse because it's more direct, like he spoke about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, the punishment is more direct. Now, the Gemara then moves into the reason why Chizkiyahu and Tzadi Dalet Amud, the reason why Chizkiyahu was zoche to defeat Sancheriv, and here's where you get into the greatness of Chizkiyahu. The Gemara says that Sancheriv was supposed to; he was destined from Min HaShamayim to come and attack and defeat Klal Yisrael, and the Navi said that it's what he should do, and he was not punished for that. That was appropriate for him to do that. However, the nevuah was only that he should defeat the Aseres HaShvatim that were in the north, and he did, and he's the one who took them into Galus. But the Navi did not say that he should also attack the Malchus Yehuda, which was Chizkiyahu, and that's where he was wrong, and because of that he was destroyed. And the Gemara makes it very clear that the difference between the Aseres HaShvatim and Malchus Yehuda was the scholarship, was learning Torah. Not the scholarship in terms of knowledge, but the effort they put into learning Torah. The Gemara says, in the widest lines, the first of the widest lines, Lakari Shainim Shekilu Me'alem Al Torah, not like the other ones, the first ones, who lightened from themselves the yoke of Torah, Avalachronim Shechbidu Alein Al Torah, that the later ones, they put themselves under the yoke of Torah. They let it sit on them very strongly, very heavily. A little earlier than that, the Gemara says, the pasuk says, "Ki lo muaf la asher mutzak lo amar Rav Elazar bar Berachya, a nimser am ayef batayra, that a nation that is tired in Torah will not be given over biyad mi hametzak lo, in the hands of the one that is pressuring it." That being tired in Torah will protect Klal Yisrael. And the Gemara later says that that it was the Schus of Torah that defeated Sancheirev. The Gemara says that it says V'chayvel Ol Mipnei Shaman, that the yoke will be destroyed because of the oil. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? That Amar Yitzchak Nafcha Chayvel Ol Shal Sancheirev, that the yoke of Sancheirev will be destroyed, Mipnei Shamnai Shal Chizkiyo, because of the oil of Chizkiyo. Shayo Dalek Bavati Knesios Bavati Midrashos, that was lit in the shoals and in the Bavati Midrashos. That they kept the electricity on late so people could learn into the night. Ma'asa, what did he do? Na'atzcherev al Pesach Beis HaMedrash, he stuck a sword in the door of the Beis HaMedrash. V'amar, he said, Kol Mishenu Isaac Bat Torah, anybody who doesn't study Torah, Yidaka Becherev will be run through with the sword. Becherev is with this sword. Badku Midan Vad Beersheva, they checked from Dan until Beersheva, Lo Matzu Am Ha'aretz, they didn't find any Am Ha'aretz. Migivas Vad Antifras, from Givas until Antifras, Lo Matzu Tinaik V'Tinaikes, Ish V'Isha, they didn't find any child or any man or woman, Shlohayu Bekien Behalchas Tumah V'Tara, that they weren't experts in the halachas of Tumah and Tara. So Klal Yisrael at that time under Chizkiyahu learned Torah. They learned diligently and with a great deal of effort. Am ayef batayra, tired, worn out in Torah. We find a similar model. There's a pasuk in Shmuel that the Chazal tell us that Yoav ben Tzruya, who was the general of David HaMelech, was successful in battle because David HaMelech was learning Torah. It was the Torah of David HaMelech that gave Yoav ben Tzruya his success in battle, in war. So this is the ideal model, that it is the learning of Torah that ultimately defeats our enemies. And of course we know that this is a matter of tension in Eretz Yisrael today, in the state of Israel, where you have mandatory army service for everyone, but there are exemptions for those who are learning Torah, and it is a matter of tension. It's a matter of there's resentment because of it, and the model of that comes from our Gemara. Now, I'm not saying that's why the Gedolim who were in Eretz Yisrael, the founding of the state, why they stayed out of the army, but there is this model over here in this Gemara. But the point that we have to bear in mind is it's not the learning of Torah that protects Klal Yisrael in war. That's, people say the learning of Torah. It's not the learning of Torah, you see from our Gemara. It's am oyef bat Torah. It's the being tired, the being worn out, the being exhausted through Torah. That's what protects Klal Yisrael in war. It's am oyef bat Torah. And that's the prerequisite. Those who are learning Torah, in order to protect Klal Yisrael, have to be doing it to the point where they are there, like the pasuk says, Adam kiyamus ba'ayhal, that a person has to be memes atzmai alei, you have to kill yourself over Torah. There has to be an effort that's put into Torah that is exhausting, that's tiring, that a person just they're totally worn out from this learning of Torah. It's more than that. If we would taka learn Torah like that, we wouldn't even need an army. It's not that learning Torah like that empowers the army to win the wars. We wouldn't even need an army. And that's what you see from Chizkiyahu. When all of Klal Yisrael was learning Torah the way they were in Chizkiyahu's Dar, then there was no need for an army. See, in David HaMelech's Dar, although he personally was learning Torah like that, but the Gemara does not say that his Dar was on the same level as Chizkiyahu. The Gemara only says this incredible thing that there were no Amaratzim, that everyone, men, women, children, knew all the halachas of Tumah and Tara. The Gemara only says it about the Dar of Chizkiyahu. You don't find it in a previous dar or in a later dar. So in David HaMelech's dar, where there were incredible Talmidei Chachamim, and those Talmidei Chachamim empowered, their Torah empowered the army, so you have that relationship between David HaMelech and Yoav ben Tzruya. Yoav ben Tzruya himself was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. But in Chizkiyahu's dar, you don't even need that relationship. The fact that everyone was learning Torah, without exception, that meant there was no need for an army. There was no need for it. That means HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to protect Klal Yisrael and get rid of and destroy those who sought to attack Klal Yisrael. Now, it goes beyond this. You see, the Gemara says, Akhar HaDvarim B'HaEmes, that after these words and the truth, that then, after these words, that Akhar HaDvarim B'HaEmes HaEleh, Basan Kherv Melech Ashur, Vayavo Biyehuda, Vayichan Al Ha'arim, Vayabatsurois, Vayomar Labakam Elav. After these words in this MS, which means after all of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was made, that Chizkiyahu was deserving of being protected, then Sancheirav came and besieged the cities of Yehuda. So the Gemara asks, first he explains. This should be the reward for this great man, for this Chizkiyahu, for the incredible thing that he did. He gets rewarded with an attack by his enemy. Wouldn't you think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should protect him and keep the enemy away? So the Gemara answers, Amravina la'achar shekafatz HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'nishba v'omar. After HaKadosh Baruch Hu took an oath and said, if I say to Chizkiyah, my sina leil Sancheirav, I'm going to bring Sancheirav, umesara leil b'yadcha, and I'll give him over to your hands. Hashta Amar, he'll say now, loy hu bayna v'loy b'yitusa bayna. I don't want him, and I don't want his fear. I don't want to be afraid of him. Don't give me the tzara, and don't save me. I don't want it. That's what Chizkiyah would have said. Miyad kafatz HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'nishma demay sina leil. HaKadosh Baruch Hu swore that he was going to bring Sancheirav and then destroy him. Shenemar nishba Hashem tzvokos leimar imlok hasher damisi kein ha'yisavach hasher atzdi hi sakum lishbar ashur ba'artzi val harai avusenu v'samei alem uloi v'siv loy me'al shechmo yosur. Hashem says, I'm going to bring Sancheirav and I'm going to destroy him in my land. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had many methods at his disposal to get rid of Sancheirav. He could have destroyed Sancheirav on his way there. Sancheirav got it in his head, he's going to come destroy Yehuda. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have brought an earthquake, he could have brought a volcano, he could have brought a malach, as he ends up doing, and let Sancheirav's army be decimated before they even enter the land of Yehuda. That's what could have happened. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu bedavka wanted to bring Sancheirav into Eretz Yisrael, have him come to Yerushalayim, and there, bedavka, outside the city limits of Yerushalayim, he was going to destroy Sancheirav's army. He knew, Hashem knew, that Chizkiyahu wouldn't be interested in that. Don't give me the problem and don't give me the nace to save me. Just don't do it. But Hashem decided to do it anyway. So we see that it was HaKadosh Baruch Hu bedavka wanted this to happen. Now why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu want this to happen? Why does he bedavka want to bring Sancheirav? What's the Mina Kenegamida?
Wipe him out for all the destruction he's done before.
Could have wiped him out before he came into Eretz Yisrael. Why does he feel he has to bring him into Eretz Yisrael and besiege Chizkiyahu?
This has to do with the sin of Nov. It's discussed later.
That's later, but it seems that that's not mentioned in this Gemara, so it's hard to say that that's the reason over here.
Isn't Sancheirav the same one who exiled the Jews around different places?
Yeah, he was supposed to do that. He walked in late. What would be the reason for bringing him into Yerushalayim.
Give Chizkiyahu the opportunity to sincere.
Okay, perhaps to give him the opportunity for Shira, that's a good point. Meaning, like the Gemara said before, that he could have been Mashiach, and this would be Gog Magog. Okay? From the context of this Gemara, it seems that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to show us the power of the learning of Chizkiyahu. See, if Sancheirov's army would have been destroyed outside, no one would have ever known about it. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects us all the time behind the scenes. We know that Bechol Dar Vadar Omnim Lenu Chaloseinu, they're always trying to destroy us, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us. We don't always see the salvation. We just know that it's happening. But we don't always see it. So here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to do it bepumbi. He wanted to do it openly. Everybody would know. Here comes Sancheirov. He besieges the city, and boom, a malach comes and wipes him out. So this would seem to be a way of making it clear that it is the Torah of Chizkiyahu that wiped out Sancheirov. The Gemara here says more than that. The Gemara says, after it says that there was nobody who didn't know Tumah and Tara, on that generation it says, and it will be on that day, that a person will have two cattle and one sheep. I'm sorry, one cattle and two sheep. For Omar, it says, elef gefen be'elef kesef, that where there'll be 1,000 vineyard vines for 1,000 silver, 1,000 kesef, l'shamer u'l'shayas yiyah, it'll be for it'll end up being destroyed. Afal pi she'elef gefen be'elef kesef, even though 1,000 gefen for 1,000 kesef, l'shamer u'l'shayas yiyah. So Rashi says over here, Rashi says in the second column, Afal pi she'elef gefen be'elef kesef, shehen yakarim, they're expensive, shehen lehem roiv kromim, they don't have a lot of vineyards, afilu haki l'shamir u'l'shayasiyah, they end up being desolate and not worked. Shemanichinai son li'ibud, the people leave their vineyards for to be fallow. Umavirinai son, they don't plant them, they leave them fallow. V'hayu oiskamat Torah, they learned Torah instead. Klal Yisrael had the opportunity to become very wealthy at that time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them a big bracha. He gave them vineyards that were extremely lucrative, because there was a lot of demand and very little supply, and they could have made a lot of money on the vineyards. But instead, the people left the vineyards and instead learned Torah. This is reminiscent, as the Gemara says in Yuma, famous Gemara in Yuma, Laman Hema Beis, where the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, you know this Gemara, at least part of it. The Gemara says, Ani va'ashi v'rasha bayin ledin, that the poor person, the wealthy person, and the Rasha will come to Din at the end of time. And they're going to say to him, they're going to say to each one, how come you didn't learn Torah? Why weren't you Isaac Batira? The Ani is going to say, how could I have involved myself in Torah? I was busy trying to support my family. The Asher is going to say, how could I involve myself in Torah? I was busy with my wealth. I had so much to take care of. You know, it's a big bracha to have wealth, but it's also time consuming. I have to deal with all of my assets and all of my business dealings and portfolios and stuff. It's all very time consuming. Otherwise, the wealth will be lost. And the Rasha will say, I was very tarud. I was very troubled by my Yetzer Hara. I couldn't learn Torah. So the Gemara here says that each one is going to be held accountable because of a previous example, and this is what you know about. The Ani will be held accountable because of Hillel. Because of Hillel, and that's the famous story with Hillel, that he went up on the skylight and he looked in to learn Torah and the snow fell on him and all that. The Rasha will be held accountable because of Yosef HaTzadik. So Yosef resisted Potiphar's wife. And the Asher will be held accountable because of Elazar ben Charsum, who was incredibly wealthy and all he wanted to do was study Torah. The Gemara says that the Ani is going to be told, you were poor, but you think you were more destitute than Hillel? Hillel was more destitute than you are. The Rasha will say, I was busy with my Yetzirah. And they're going to say to him, you had a big Yetzirah. You think you had a bigger Yetzirah than Yosef HaTzadik? He had a bigger Yetzirah than you. And look what he did. And the Ashir, the wealthy person, is going to be told, yeah, you were rich, but you weren't as rich as Rav Elazar ben Charsum, he was more wealthy than you are, and look what he did. Now, there was a sefer when I was in yeshiva that came out. It was called Achas Sha'alti, and this sefer, it was written anonymously, but it must have been written by a Talmud Chacham. Just from the way it was written, it was clearly a knowledgeable person who wrote the sefer. And the sefer was a small sefer. It was a Musar sefer, and it was a contemporary sefer, and it was centered around this Gemara in Yuma. And he based his sefer on a fundamental question in this Gemara. That what are we talking about over here? The Ani, the Ashir, and the Rasha. What did they do wrong? Did they do Averis? Did they steal, kill, commit Gilei Arayis, be Mechalel Shabbos, eat Treif? What were they doing? If they were doing things like that, you don't need to punish them because of Hillel, Yosef HaTzadik, and Rav Elazar ben Charsum. They went against the Torah. You go against the Torah, a person gets punished. If you know a person knowingly does not fear, he gets punished. You don't have to go bring a raya from these great people. So then we can say they weren't really doing anything wrong. They just weren't excelling like Yosef HaTzadik, Hillel, and Rav Elazar ben Charsum. Well, if they weren't excelling, how can you punish them? How can you hold them accountable? I mean, what, we're all mechuyev to excel? So the basis of the sefer was that what the Gemara is coming to say over here is mipnei ma lo yasakta b'Torah. Not why did you do averis? Mipnei ma lo yasakta b'Torah. Why didn't you throw yourself, involve yourself in Torah? The Gemara is coming to tell us that every male in Klal Yisrael has a chiyuv to be oisek b'Torah. Now we know that Talmud Torah is the greatest of all mitzvahs. It's the one that we get the most schar for. The Talmud Torah keneged kulam. There's no greater mitzvah than learning Torah. But at the same time, when it comes to prioritizing, Talmud Torah gets bumped almost to the bottom of the list. Because when there's a mitzvah averes, when a mitzvah has to be done now, and you're the only one who can do it, you must close your gemara and do the mitzvah. You're not allowed lilmud zamanas lasais. Even though we normally say isik for mitzvah, pater mina mitzvah. If you're involved in one mitzvah, you're pater from another mitzvah. But when it comes to learning, learning has to be lilmud zamanas lasais in order to perform. And unless it's tairascha umnascha, unless you're like Rav Shimbar Yochai, that all you do is learn and you don't do mamish anything else, like Rav Shimbar Yochai on a Sunday, we're in the cave, they mamish, did nothing, absolutely nothing but learn. Unless you're on that madrega, you have to stop learning to do mitzvahs. Even they had to stop for mitzvahs daraisa like Kriya Shema. And we certainly have to stop when mitzvahs come up. So like the Gemara says, Mevatlan Talmud Torah for Mikra Megillah, Mevatlan Talmud Torah for Halvaya Sameis and for Achnasas Kala, if a person is learning Torah, and a Levaya, a Jewish Levaya, passes by within Dalet Amos of him, he's Mechuyev, they stand up and walk Dalet Amos with the mace to accompany the mace. Mechuyev to. I'm in the middle of learning. But here it's a mitzvah veris. You gotta get up and do it. Right? You have to get up and you have to stop and daven and say Kriyashma. You gotta stop and daven if you're in the middle of learning. If you're in the middle of learning and it's time to get ready for Shabbos, you have to stop and get ready for Shabbos. You know, we know that there are boundaries in learning Torah, even though it's the greatest of all mitzvahs. There are the halacha is that we have to, a male Jew has to learn Torah unless he has another thing that he has to do. But if there's nothing else that we have to do, we have to learn Torah. So if a person is sitting around, a man is sitting around saying, "I'm bored," there's no excuse for that. Because a male Jew has to learn Torah. What do you mean you're bored? If you have nothing to do, you have to learn Torah. There's no room to be bored. But if a person says, I gotta go to work to support my family, he can close the Gemara and go to work and support his family. If he says, I have to go eat, he can close the Gemara and go eat. I have to take care of myself, I have to take a shower, I have to go work out and exercise. I need a diversion because I'm having trouble concentrating. These are all things that are valid reasons to stop learning and go do other things. I have to spend time with my family. I have to spend time with my wife. I have to date in order to marry. Right? These are all reasons to close the Gemara and go do what he has to do. There comes a point where a person can have so many excuses that he ends up not learning ever, because since everything else supersedes Torah, then a person can live a life of excuses where there's always something, there's always a reason why I can't learn right now. I'm not feeling so great, it's too hot, it's too cold, my back hurts, I'm tired, I'm hungry, I have to take care of the bills, I gotta file my taxes, whoops, I have to spend time, I gotta make this phone call, I gotta return that phone call, I gotta answer this email, I gotta, right, there's so many diversions, I have to go to this chasana, I gotta go to that bris, there's so many things that can be distractions. And taken individually, each one is a valid excuse. Each one taken on its own merit, individually, is a good reason, or is a valid reason to close the Gemara and do what he has to do. But collectively, if a person is going to live a life, this is what he says in that Sefer, he's going to live a life of excuses, he'll never learn Torah. Ever. Because there's always going to be something. Always. So he understands, that's Pshat in the Gemara over here in Yuma. The Ani, the Ashir, and the Rasha are each saying that I couldn't learn. Every moment I was busy with my what I had to be busy with. The Ani is, I was always busy with trying to support my family. The Ashir says, I was always busy with my assets and with my portfolios. I couldn't leave it to be. The Gemara says each one of these people is going to be held accountable from Hillel, from Rav Elazar ben Chasam, and from Yosef, because they were more impoverished, more wealthy, and had a greater Yetzirah than anybody else, and yet they found a way to be Isaac Batira. We all have to give up something in order to learn. If you're going to say it's got to be perfect for me to learn, where there's no demands on my time, there's no one who wants to speak to me, there's no one who needs me, I don't have any phone calls to return, any emails to answer, I don't have any bills to pay, I don't have work to do, I'm feeling perfectly fine, the temperature control is perfectly the way it's supposed to be, I'm not hungry, I'm not tired, and it's got to be just bubble perfect in order for me to learn Torah, I'm never going to learn Torah. A person has to say, I'm going to learn when it's not so great, when I don't feel so great, when I'm a little bit hot, I'm sweaty, I'm a little bit tired, it's too cold, I'm hungry, the kids need a little bit of help, but I've helped them already, and now I just have to go out to learn. There's a pile of mail on my desk that has to be taken care of. My email box is full. But you gotta learn. Otherwise, you're never gonna learn. That's the way he understood this Gemara. He wrote this Sefer, this small Sefer, about this whole idea. Now, Rav Elazar ben Chasam, the wealthy one in this Gemara, what does the Gemara say about him? The Gemara says, Amru alav al Rav Elazar ben Chasam, she'iniach lo aviv elef ayarais biyabasha, his father left him, his father when he died left him, 1,000 cities on land, and corresponding to them 1,000 boats in the ocean, meaning doing trade. So he had an incredible amount of business that he could have been taken care of. Every day he would take a sack of flour, alksef on his shoulder, and he went from city to city and from neighborhood to neighborhood, lilmod Torah, to learn Torah. He didn't want to be involved in all of the wealth that his father left him. Pamachas, one time, his servants found him, and they thought that he wasn't him. They thought he was stama person. Vasuban Gaya, they tried to get him to work. Amr Lahan, he said to him, Bavakasha mikem, I plead of you, I ask of you, Hanichuni, leave me alone, Ve'elech lamod Torah, I'm going to go learn Torah. Amru loy, they said to him, Chaye Rav Elazar ben Chasam, She'em anichin oischa, that we swear by the life of Rav Elazar ben Chasam, we're not going to leave you alone. They didn't realize he was Rav Elazar ben Chasam. Umiyamav, and all his days, Lai Halach Vera a son, he never went to go see his cities. I mean, he inherited incredible wealth. He never went to go look. He never went to go see the cities, the boats, the big operation, the whole thing. He never went to see it. El Yoshev Isaac Batara Kal Hayam Vikal Halaila. He would learn all day and all night. He ignored all the wealth. Now, one could have said, well, isn't that Baltashchis? I mean, what's going to happen to the empire, to the business empire, if he goes and learns Torah? What about all that stucco you could have given? You know, what's going to happen? It's going to crumble if he's not involved with it. No one's running the ship, so then it's going to sink. Nothing's going to happen. So, what was this great? Why is he being held up as an incredible example of a person who went and gave it all up and went to go learn Torah? So you see again the same idea that there's greatness and there's greatness. As we mentioned before, when it came to learning and war, if there is great learning going on, that will empower the army. But if there is incredible learning going on, the entire nation is learning Torah, you don't even need an army. The people say that, I've heard this since I was a yeshiva bachur, people say that if this system of people learning Torah, if everybody's going to learn, then there'll be no way of supporting anybody. You have to have people who don't learn, because then how on earth, it's not a self-supporting system. It's going to implode. If there's a constant push that everybody should learn Torah and not work, then the whole system will implode, because where's the support going to come from? Although I am an advocate of people working, and I don't think everybody should go learn, however, that's not the reason. That's wrong. That reason is not a hashkaf of the Torah. Because al pi hashkaf asa Torah, according to the hashkaf of the Torah, if everyone would learn the way they're supposed to, diligently, like in the Dar of Chizkiyahu, you wouldn't need an army, you wouldn't need work, you wouldn't need businesses, everything will be provided. The Torah is clear that if you are learning Torah, all your needs will be provided. But you got to be learning correctly. Everybody's got to be oyef bat Torah. Everybody's got to be exhausted with Torah, in learning Torah. Totally immersed, completely focused on learning Torah. If that's what happens and it's nationwide, there'll be no problems. There'll be no need, there'll be no foreign enemies attacking us, there'll be no financial issues, everything will go fine. But the problem is that that's not what happens. You see, the system, what ends up happening is people go to learn, but they don't put in the effort that is meant in this Gemara. I include myself in this category. That the effort that the Gemara is speaking about isn't accomplished. There is scholarship, but scholarship is not the key. It's diligence, it's ayefus, it's throwing oneself into it and becoming exhausted in Torah. That's what's necessary. Theoretically, if everyone would do it, everything would be fine. But lemaisa, that's not what happens. Lemaisa, when people are learning Torah, there are those who do it very diligently like they're supposed to, and make themselves oyef bat Torah. They exhaust themselves in Torah. Those are the ones who emerge as great Talmidei Chachamim in our dar. But many people are learning nicely, which is good. They're learning fine. They're learning nicely. But not on this level. Not on the level that the Gemara is talking about over here. Therefore, we do need an army. We do need financial support. We do need to watch out for our needs. We can't ignore them, because we're not on this level. The Dar of Chizkiyahu were a complete Dar of Rav Elazar ben Charsum's, where they gave up whatever focus on wealth and on any of their needs and only learned Torah. In such a Dar, there's not even a need for an army. Just as, not just that it empowers the army, there's no need for an army. However, the model, the individual model of Rav Elazar ben Charsum, where a person says, I'm going to give up everything and throw myself into Torah, if he really means it, you see from the Gemara, it's correct. It's not Baal Tashchis. Nothing's going to be lost. There won't be less tzedakah because of that. The tzedakah obviously won't come from him, because his businesses won't produce tzedakah. But no one's going to be lacking funds because he decided to do that. That's not wrong. But the catch is, it has to be sincere and it has to be real, that a person actually is throwing himself into learning. The vast majority of people today would not do that. We are all very, very pampered. We don't like to admit it, but we are extremely pampered. We live in a day and age where that our ancestors could never have dreamed of the ease and the pleasures that we have. We don't look at it that way, because all we can focus on is all of our troubles and problems and this and the other thing. But lemaisa, 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 just temperature control. Think of that. Think of it that our ancestors would even dream of people constantly being in a temperature that is very comfortable all the time. Like, the whole thing is ludicrous. In the summertime you're hot, in the wintertime you're cold. That's the last life. That's the way it is. Not us. Not us. We have air conditioning, heating, everything's beautiful, right? That's just one example. That's one example. But there's so much that we're pampered with today. Soft beds, hot showers, sweet food. I mean, we have all kinds of things that they didn't dream of before. And therefore, today, it's much more difficult for a person to throw themselves into Torah the way that the Gemara is describing with Rav Lazar ben Charsim. So, is Rav Lazar ben Charsim, is he still going to be held up as the example that will be mechayev the Ashirim? Meaning a wealthy person is like, I could never learn because I was always involved in my business. Yes, Rav Lazar ben Charsim will be the example that will incriminate that Ashir. Because Hashem will say, look, Rav Lazar ben Charsim was wealthier than you, and he gave up everything and just went to learn. You could have at least kept the Seder. You could have at least done Nafiyomi. You could have at least done something, right? You could have at least learned an hour a day. But for the wealthy person to say, I want to give up everything, I just want to learn Torah. That's great if he can do it like Rav Lazar ben Charsim. If he can really throw himself into it, that's fine. But otherwise, the taka is batashlis. Taka is a loss. Like, that money's not going to be made up any other way. And who says that this wealthy person himself will be able to be supported if he gives up everything? So there is a fine line over here between doing it sincerely or doing it insincerely. And that's the Rav Lazar ben Charsim example. And that, but the Dor of Chizkiyahu, of course, did it correctly. And they didn't do it of their own choice. They did it because Chizkiyahu enforced it. He used his role as Melech to make it a nationwide focus. Everyone will learn. No one will have any other focus. And that's the way it's going to be. That was the Rav Lazar ben Charsim. That's the door of Chizkiyahu. That's what he did. Okay. Now the Gemara then goes on with Sancheriv coming to attack Yerushalayim, and how he besieged Yerushalayim, and on Tzadi Heyam and Aleph we get into the whole dune of Sancheriv and Erev Pesach. So, as I mentioned to you last time, this is a great Erev Pesach shir, or eighth day of Pesach shir, because the Haftarah of Oid Ayom Benoiv Lamoid is the eighth day of Pesach. And I have given this shir in the past to the women. So I will tell you briefly about this, about Erev Pesach and Sancheriv. There are no coincidences, since Sancheriv comes on Erev Pesach. The Gemara tells us in Tzadi Hey, why did he come Erev Pesach? Because his stargazers told him that the stars tell us that you will be successful in defeating Yerushalayim if you attack today, which was Erev Pesach. So Sancheriv, knowing that he only could only do it that day, became very, very excited and also very nervous that he had to attack today. But the problem was, he was a 10 days journey with all of his army from Yerushalayim. So he got in the car and put the pedal to the metal, and they sped off to Yerushalayim as fast as they could. And the Gemara says he traveled a 10-day travel in one day. And they all got to Yerushalayim. They got to Yerushalayim towards Shkia, but it was still Erev Pesach. And it was still possible to fulfill what the stargazers had seen and defeat Yerushalayim that day. The Gemara says that Sancheirav got to Noiv. Noiv was a small city outside Yerushalayim. And he looked towards Yerushalayim, and Yerushalayim appeared to him to be this little tiny hamlet. And he said, For this, I rushed all this way? Big deal. I have so many soldiers. He had 185,000 officers. So soldiers, you're talking about a million soldiers at least. So he says, I have so many soldiers. All they need to do is each one of them take a hammer and bang on the wall. That'll be the end of the wall. This is what I ran for? He told the soldiers, go to sleep. Tomorrow morning, we'll all just take a hammer, bang on the wall, and we'll defeat Yerushalayim. That night, he lost the opportunity because it was only Erev Pesach that he could have defeated Yerushalayim. That night was the night of Pesach, and the Hashem sent the Malach, and the Malach came, Gavriel, and wiped out the army of Sancheirav. It was the night of Pesach. We read about this in Nirtza at the Haggadah. It's one of the things that's mentioned on Vayhi b'chatzi ha'layla that we read that Sancheirav's army was decimated on the night of Pesach. The Gemara tells us what is the meaning of the pasuk Oid Hayoim B'Noiv Lamoid, while it's still day to get to Noiv, that Sancheirav rushed to get to Noiv Yerakayanim before the end of the day. Why Noiv? So the Gemara tells us that Amrav Huna Oisai Hayoim Ishtayer Me'avayna Shal Noiv. That day remained from the sin of Noiv. That there was still retribution that had to happen because of Noiv Yerakayanim. The sin of Noiv Yerakayanim, which you know, happened in the time of Shaul HaMelech and David HaMelech. That Shaul was chasing David. David sought refuge in the city of Noiv Yerakayanim. And there they gave him to eat and they gave him a sword. And Doeg HaAdaimi was there. He was there to be in front of Hashem. And he saw what happened. He was Malshin. He told Lashon Hara to Shaul about what Noiv Yerakayanim did. And as a result, Shaul told Doeg to wipe out the city for treason because they had helped, they aided and abetted an enemy of the crown, David HaMelech. And therefore, they were all destroyed except for one Kayan who got away, which will be the next Gemara. Now, the Gemara tells us, for that Avera, Doeg HaDaimi lost his chelik in Olam Haba. Shaul HaMelech was one of his Averis. He only did two Averis, but that was one of them. And, I'm sorry, that was not one of the two. It was a separate thing. He did two other things. But Shaul ends up being killed. David HaMelech himself is going to be culpable for having indirectly caused the death of Noiv Yerakayanim. But nationally, this was a blemish for Klal Yisrael. And at this time, in time of Chizkiyahu and Sancheirav, there was still what to pay for that punishment, for that sin. It was such a terrible avera. The stargazers were not wrong. The Kildai were not wrong. If Sancheirav would have attacked Erev Pesach, he would have won. Because there was a weakness in Klal Yisrael because of the Aver of Noiv Yerakayanim. He didn't, so he didn't win. He was destroyed. Says the Aruch Laner. The Aruch Laner writes, why Erev Pesach? Why should Erev Pesach be the day that is available because of Noiv Yerakayanim that he had to attack on Erev Pesach? Why Erev Pesach? What do you say? Why Erev Pesach? Says the Aruch Laner that you know Kohanim only work officially 2 weeks out of the year. There's a 24 Mishmar cycle, and they work it once every 24 weeks, which is a little more than twice a year. They can also work during Yom Tovim. So Shavuos, Sukkot, Pesach, they can come to Yerushalayim and work. the Beis HaMikdash has busy days and it has less busy days. A regular day is not so busy. Rosh Chodesh, like today, is a little bit busy. Yontif is very busy. But what's the busiest day of the year in the Beis HaMikdash?
Erev Pesach.
Yud Dalet Nisan is the busiest day of the year. Because Yud Dalet Nisan is the day that everyone in Klal Yisrael has to be part of a karban. Men, women, and children who are old enough, everyone has to be attached to a karban. Not everyone brings a karban, but they have to be attached to a karban. There's an eyewitness account that is mentioned, I believe in the Siddur Yavetz, he brings it, that there was a Roman officer who, before the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash, was outside Yerushalayim on Yud Dalet Nisan, and he reports that all he saw was a sea of light because of all the sheep. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of sheep that were being brought for Yud Dalet Nisan, and they all had to be slaughtered in a 6-hour span from Chatzais until Shkia. They all had to be slaughtered, the blood had to be thrown on the Mizbeach, and then of course they were all roasted and used for the Seder that night. All of Klal Yisrael. Kohanim didn't have to work more than 2 weeks a year. But Erev Pesach was all hands on deck. You needed every able-bodied and Tahar Kohen to be there in Yerushalayim. Because there was the volume of karbonos was immense. The Mishnah describes in detail how they would set up lines, and they would pass the blood and from one to the other, and the empty containers, the full containers, to get to the Mizbeach, and lines of Kohanim doing this, moving it along. It was just one after the other, after the other. It was a factory. It had to happen on Erev Pesach. Says the Aruch HaNer, when Shaul had Noiv Ir HaKayanim killed out by Doeg HaDoimi, there was a dearth of Kayhanim. There was all of a sudden a dearth of Kayhanim in Klal Yisrael. Says the Aruch HaNer, the next Erev Pesach, there were not enough Kayhanim to process all the Karbonos Pesach. And as a result, there were people who could not bring their Karbon Pesach. Says the Aruch HaNer, this went on for generations before the Kohanim replenished themselves enough that there would be enough Kohanim to process all the Korbanos Pesach. For generations it went on. Even in the time of Chizkiyahu, says the Aruch HaNer, which is a couple hundred years later, they still, he writes, perhaps did not have enough Kohanim to fill the need on Erev Pesach. Says the Aruch HaNer, when was there a kitrug? When was there that the prosecuting angels could come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, look what Klal Yisrael did, that they killed the Kohanim? It was Erev Pesach when they were able to do that. Because Erev Pesach was the time when there weren't enough Kohanim. And that was all because of Noiv Ir HaKayanim. That's why Erev Pesach was the time that if Sancheirav would have attacked, he would have won. But in reality, what happens? He doesn't attack because the city appears to him to be small and insignificant. And therefore, he waits till Pesach itself. And on Pesach, of course, the Zchus, the night of Pesach, Leil Shimurim, just the opposite. That's the most dangerous time for him to try to attack. That's when the Mazel would dictate that we're in protection. And he was decimated, totally wiped out. In whose zechus did it happen that Sancheirev saw Yerushalayim as a small little hamlet and didn't bother to attack? Remember, he thought at first he had to attack on Erev Pesach and he was ready to do it. The only thing that stopped him is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the city appear to him to be insignificant. Whose zechus was it that triggered that appearance to Sancheirev? Of course, Chizkiyahu. What midah of Chizkiyahu caused that? His anivus, his humility. That Chizkiyahu was mocked in himself. He didn't think highly of himself as being this great big Talmud Chacham who caused everybody to learn Torah. He thought of himself as being an insignificant person, and as a result, the city appeared insignificant to Sanherib. And therefore, he did not attack. The kapara, the final kapara for Noiv Ira Kayanim, instead of it coming through the physical destruction of Yerushalayim, which would have happened had he attacked, instead it came through the learning of Torah and the Anivus of Chizkiyahu, because you know the learning of Torah and Anivus go together. Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the Anav Mikol Adam, is not by mistake. It's because he's the greatest Navi, the greatest Talmud Chacham, the greatest who knew Torah the most. Therefore, he is the Anav Mikol Adam, because they go together. Torah and Anivus go together. If someone is a Talmud Chacham, you should know he's an Anav. If he's an Anav, he can be a Talmud Chacham. He can't be a Talmud Chacham and not be an Anav. They don't go together. They don't go together. The Torah and the Anivus of Chizkiyahu is ultimately what finally was mechaper for Noiv Ira Kayanim. And that's why Sancheirav doesn't attack, and instead he attacks on Pesach itself, which is his undoing. That's the thread that runs through this Gemara over here with Erev Pesach and Sancheirav and Noiv Ira Kayanim. Question?
So did women and children come to Yerushalayim on Erev Pesach as well?
Yeah.
And was there enough room in
that was one of the Nisan. That was one of the Nisan.
Everyone stayed there at least for the first day of Yom Tov.
Yep. It was back. The other of the Shal Shagam, Shavuos and Sukkot, the women didn't have to come. Mm-hmm. And certainly Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, nobody had to come. People liked to come, they didn't have to. But Pesach, even the women had to come. And the children who were old enough, they had to come because of the Karban Pesach.
And so the Chagiga that you would offer on Yom Tov, did they offer that on the day of Yom Tov, the first day, or did they offer it during Chol HaMoed?
The Chagiga is there's two different Chagigas. There's a Chagiga that comes with the Karban Pesach if you need more meat in order to eat it al HaSaiva, to eat it when you're satiated. That would be brought with the Karban Pesach. And then there was also Chagigas HaRegel.
So they couldn't make any other meat. It had to be for the Seder for that night if they wanted to eat meat.
Well, that was the reason. The Chagigas HaRegel was... the Chagiga was brought in order to for that reason.
I'm saying if you didn't want to bring a Chagiga and you wanted to cook, I don't know, chicken or something.
Oh, you probably could do that. You could do that, but that was the brought a Chagiga.
So how long is the time period from slaughter Nov till...
A couple hundred years.
A couple hundred?
Yeah.
And they never fully replenished enough people to...
That's what he says. He writes that it could be they weren't even full yet.
It's been an age for the first Sancheirav to have been able to get there and attend the trip. And so what was the reason?
What's that?
What was the reason for this Nes to occur for Sancheirav to be there just to make the Nes even greater?
Yeah, that's what we said before. There's the whole fact that he came in the first place was in order to make the Nes happen.
Was that considered a piece of the Derech for Sancheirav
sure,
to make it?
Sure, absolutely.
So it was a miracle that it was done for him.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it was done for us. It was done for us that it should happen, but it happened to him. Kriyas Yamsov was also done to the Mitzrim, but it was for us. Asher Makos were done to the Mitzrim, but it was for us.
Would people travel home during Chol HaMoed, or would they stay the whole Yom Tov?
No, they could. Depending on the person.